This Torah class is brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.
Okay, Parshas Chukas. The topic tonight is going to be a very interesting topic, and that is the utilization of scientific data obtained through immoral means. So we have a little bit of a different type of topic this evening. Much attention has been focused on scientific data that was compiled by German scientists during the Holocaust. Information that was obtained as a result of cruel and inhumane experiments, not to speak of inhuman and immoral experiments, that were conducted upon inmates and prisoners of the concentration camps. Some time ago, the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, they were attempting to perfect an antidote to the phosgene poison gas. Okay, so they're trying to create an antidote to this poison gas, and they realized that actually the best source for an antidote to this gas was information gleaned by the Germans as a result of experiments that the Germans tried to use on their inmates. And there was a big uproar whether they would be allowed to take this information that the Nazis had gleaned from their experiments and publish it and accept it as scientific fact and try to actually take advantage of it. Even more significantly, in the Hypothermia Research Laboratory of the University of Minnesota, they investigated procedures utilized in the rescue of persons accidentally swept into icy water. Now we know that among the most brutal of the Nazi crimes were experiments involving hypothermia performed at the Dachau concentration camps. These studies were designed to establish the most effective treatment for victims of immersion hypothermia, particularly German airmen that were shot down over the icy North Sea. So what they did was they took 300 Jewish inmates, and they were placed in near-freezing water for various periods of time. And the Nazis tried various experiments of different ways to warm up these poor Yidden, Nebuch. The results of the experiment were 80 to 90 Jews died during these experiments. And the question now is, are we allowed to use the information the Nazis have gleaned through this cruel, inhuman torture to try to save the lives or benefit the lives of people who are suffering hypothermia? Now, very interesting that the German experiments were not the only experiments that are known to be inhuman and cruel. First of all, people who know, in Tuskegee, Alabama, there was a study involving 412 black sharecroppers who were suffering from syphilis. It's probably the best known, most notorious case. The physicians observed the ravages of the disease, including blindness, paralysis, dementia, and early death, without disclosing to the patients their diagnosis. Other examples include the Willowbrook hepatitis study, where retarded children were deliberately given the hepatitis virus. Okay, so this is a situation which is not specific, which is not unique to the Nazi war crimes. But nevertheless, this is something that comes up very often. And it's been said that most medical knowledge that we have today, we don't know exactly what percent, but most medical knowledge that we have today is based on cruel and inhuman experimentation. And the question is, halachically, are we allowed to use this information? Or do we say that since it was obtained through halachically prohibited means and ways, do we say, you know, it's like a mitzvah haba avero? We're not allowed to recognize, we're not allowed to use this information. So, very interesting. Dr. Henry Beecher published in June 16th, 1966 in the New England Journal of Medicine, he formulates what he considers that illicitly obtained information cannot be recognized and admitted as evidence in scientific investigations. His principle is that any information that is obtained immorally is inherently immoral. That was the principle of Dr. Beachman. And this principle was supported by Daniel Callahan and by Abraham Foxman, the national director of the Anti-Defamation League. Okay, so now our question is, what does the halacha say about this? You know, at first glance you hear the Nazis gleaned information by torturing Jews, so we're naturally horrified to even consider taking advantage of this information. You're going to use information that Nazis used at our own brother and sister's expense? I mean, how could we allow this information to be used? So the first thing we have to understand is that in the realm of halacha, our natural inclinations play absolutely zero role in deciding what the halacha is. Very often, there are various situations in historical situations, situations of hashkafa. We want to know what to do. So you hear people say, well, my opinion is, or my natural reaction is, that's very nice, you're entitled to your opinion, you're entitled to a natural reaction, but nevertheless, ultimately, the halacha does not recognize the natural inclination or the personal opinion of a layman, unless you're able to quote chapter and verse. The Rambam says, the Gemara says this, and Shas says like this. You're entitled to your opinion, but nevertheless, one has to abdicate their opinion in the face of halacha. And this is the important lesson for Parashas Lukas. We have the Paraduma. The main lesson of the Paraduma is that we have no understanding of it, and we accept it because Ma Ezeh Be'Avi Shemayim Gozer Alai. You know, people want to know, should I go to the parade? Should I not go to the parade? Should people go to the army, not go to the army? And I think, it's wonderful, you feel, you think. If you're able to quote chapter and verse, this is what the Gemara says, this is what the Shulchan Aruch says, so then your opinion is supported by the halacha. Otherwise, it has no halachic significance. Okay, so let's begin by analyzing this topic halachically, and we start with the Gemara Pesachim. The Gemara Pesachim says like this, and this is one of the main arguments that is marshaled to try to explain why maybe it's perhaps not appropriate to use this information in helping people. That is, the Gemara says like this, Kiyasa Ravin, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Bachol Misrapin Chutz Me'avodah Zarah, V'Gilui Arayos U'Shvichas Dam. One is allowed to cure yourself with anything. You need to cure yourself. You want to take vitamins that don't work. Gesundheit. You want to take, you know, various fish oils that who knows if they do anything. No problem. You could do whatever you want. You could take any pills. You think it costs more money. It works better. Yeah, whatever. Whatever you need to do to cure yourself, you're allowed to do. However, there are three things you're not allowed to use to cure yourself. Avodah Zarah, idolatry. In other words, if the only way to cure yourself is to, you know, you have an image of the Buddha and you need to bow down to the Buddha in order to get cured, you cannot do that to cure yourself. Gilui Arayos, someone claims that the only way they're going to be cured is if they gaze at an immodestly clad woman. So you say, well, it's only a lav in the Torah to gaze at an immodestly clad woman, so I don't have to give up my life, and that's the only way I'm going to live. No, it's called Abizrai de Arayos. It's actually considered the dust of Gilui Arayos, and one would have to give up their life, even if that's the only way to save yourself. Or Shvichas Damim. If somebody would have to kill someone else to cure themselves, let's say they had some kind of uncontrollable desire to kill, and that would be the only way to save their own life, they would not be allowed to do so. Okay, so if that's the case, perhaps we could make the case, that to get information, to use information that the Nazis gleaned through bloodshed and through murder, that is considered a violation of the Gemara that says that we're not allowed to cure yourself through bloodshed, right? If the Nazis figured out how to cure someone, how to help someone through hypothermia by killing Jews, so the Gemara says you're not allowed to cure yourself through shvichos damim, through bloodshed. And in fact, this would explain the Gemara in Pesachim. The Gemara tells us about a king by the name of Chizkiyo HaMelech. Chizkiyo HaMelech, in his career, he did six major things. Three of the things the Chachamim gave him a haskama on, they gave him an endorsement. Three of the things he did, the Chachamim did not give him an endorsement. What are the things that he did, says the Gemara in Pesachim, Daf Nun Vav Amid Aleph. The Gemara says that his father was a Rasha. His father Achaz was a Rasha. Chizkiyo took the bones of his father Achaz, dragged them through the street. The Chachamim said, good job, kudos to you, you know, two thumbs up. The Chachamim gave him a haskama on it. And then we read in this week's parasha how the Jews were bitten by the snakes, right? They were bitten by the snakes until Moshe Rabbeinu constructs Nechash HaNechoshes, the copper snake. And ultimately, Chizkiyo HaMelech took the snake of Moshe Rabbeinu and he destroyed it, he crushed it, and the Chachamim said, good going. And finally, Chizkiyo HaMelech hid what we call Sefer Refuos, the book of healing. There was a book. We don't know exactly who wrote it, the Rambam says. And you open up the book, it says if you have a headache, you know, eat this piece of grass. You have an ingrown toenail, do this and this and this. You have the flu, do that. And in this book, you can look up any disease, any illness, any sickness. It tells you exactly what to do. And Chizkiyahu HaMelech took this book, and he hid the book. Ask the Rambam, what in the world is he doing? Why would he hide the book of refuahs? Here, the Jews are sick, they have headaches, they have colds, they have ingrown toenails, and if only they could open up the book, the Sefer Refuahs, and cure themselves, why would Chizkiyahu HaMelech hide the book? This is a very important work. This is a very important piece of literature. And the Rambam is forced to say something which many Achrayim struggle to understand. And that is Chizkiyahu HaMelech hid the book because many of the practices in the book involved forbidden practices. It would say to draw a certain image and to focus on the image and to acknowledge that the image has certain powers. And therefore, the Rambam says, since this was a forbidden form of activity, Chizkiyahu HaMelech took the book and he hid the book. So the Rambam asks, so why did whoever wrote it, why did he write it in the first place? So the Rambam says, there are many things you're allowed to learn about, but you're not allowed to perform. For instance, the Sanhedrin had to know sorcery. Right? Otherwise, how would they put a sorcerer to death? So the Sanhedrin had to know all the intricate nuances of how to perform sorcery. But of course, the Sanhedrin never actually performed sorcery, because there are many things you're allowed to know about and learn about, but you're not allowed to perform. So whoever authored the work Sefer HaRefuahs, by the way, if you want to know who wrote it, the Tashbetz writes that when the sons of Noach are on the Teva and they're crowded together with all the wild animals and the garbage is building up and all the animals, you know, the fleas and all the hygienic conditions were very poor and disease was rampant. So two malachim came down from Shemayim and they taught Noach's sons the Sefer HaRefuahs. Okay, the Rambam doesn't write about that. That's what the Tashbetz writes that he heard from his Rebbe, the Maharami Rotenberg, when he was in jail. But in any event, Chizkiyahu HaMelech saw that people, instead of just learning about these refuahs, actually were performing the refuahs, and therefore Chizkiyahu HaMelech hid it. But the question is, but human life reigns supreme. So what if these activities are forbidden? But it would save lives. Says the Rambam, the answer is, you can't cure yourself with anything. You can't cure yourself with Avodah Zarah, with Gilui Arayos, with Shpichas Damim. So even if it's going to mean loss of life, it doesn't mean you could use that remedy, you could use that cure. So perhaps then we can make the case that whatever information the Nazis gleaned, or the United States gleaned by torturing these African Americans through the syphilis virus, we're not allowed halachically to use that information because this is a violation of Bakol Misrapin Chutz Mishvichas Damim. If this information came at the expense of bloodshed, you're not allowed to use it. You can't cure people with it. That's what the Gemara says. But what we're going to do now is we're going to draw a very important distinction that the entire shir rests upon. Okay? You get this distinction, you get the shir. And that is the Gemara that says you're not a cure person, you're not a cure at the expense of bloodshed. That means you're not allowed to kill someone in order to heal yourself or to heal someone else. That means like this. If the medicine that you're using, if the remedy that you're using means you're going to be killing somebody, you can't use that medicine, you can't use that remedy.
Like organ transplantation. What about the mice, the white mice in the laboratory?
White mice are not people. God gave animals for our use. If the animal is not being used for us, it's suffering. An animal that's sitting there in its cage, and a human being could use it, and the liberals would like to say, no, don't take the animal, you're going to hurt the animal. The animal is suffering in its cage. It has the greatest pleasure you could give an animal is to use it for the purpose of mankind. That's why God created it. But we're not talking about animals here. We're talking about human beings. If saving someone's life means killing somebody else, you're not allowed to do it. But in the situation that we're dealing with, where the Nazis gleaned information unethically, or the Americans gleaned information unethically, they did what they did. It's ipso facto. It's finished. The information has already been gleaned. Now what? You're going to ignore it? You're not killing anybody by ignoring that information. You're not killing anybody by using that information. The information is sitting there on a piece of paper. So what are you going to do? You're going to be an ostrich? You're going to stick your head in the sand and you're going to say, no, I'm not using it because it came at the expense of human life? That already happened in the past. If using a medicinal element, a remedy, means killing someone, so you can't kill someone to cure yourself. But using this information is not killing anyone. Someone has already been killed in the past, unfortunately. Now you want to know, is this information permitted? So what the Rambam tells us that Chizkiyahu hid, the Sefer HaRefuos, has no bearing whatsoever on this issue. The Sefer HaRefuos you're now to use because using those refuos means violating Avodah Zarah. But using this information gleaned by the Nazis doesn't mean killing anyone. The Nazis did what they did, Nebuch, 50, 60 years ago. Now the information is sitting here. So what the Rambam says has really no bearing on this issue. Okay. Perhaps we could extrapolate from another case. And that is, someone once came to Rav Yaakov Emden, and he asked Rav Yaakov Emden the following question. This is brought in the Shelas Yaivetz, Chelek Beis, Simen Kuf Nunchas. There was a court. It was a non-Jewish court. And the court used to carry out capital punishment, and they used to use a very big sword. A big sword. And this guy, right, he wanted to buy this sword, right? Jews like to buy swords. And he went over to the court. He said, I'll buy the sword off you for $1 million. They said, fine. He takes the sword, and he goes to Main Street. And he sees on Main Street that the guy who checks for sharpness, he also sharpens knives. Why? I have no idea. So he goes to Main Street, and he says, you know, you mind sharpening this knife? I need it to shecht behemoth. So now the question is this guy allowed to take the knife that the executioner used to kill untold amounts of people, even Jews, and use it to shecht animals? So the person came to Rav Yaakov Emden, and like most people ask a rabbi a question, Rabbi, I have a question, and I would like to answer, right? So the man offered the following answer to Rav Yaakov Emden. That no, you can use this, I can use this sword. Why? Because there's a rule that we learned from this week's parasha. And that is, it says, look at number 8. It says, V'chol asher yiga al pnei asada b'chal al cherev. Anything that touches the face of the field, where there is someone slain by the sword. So the Gemara Masechta Shabbos picks up on this lashon, chal al cherev. Slain by the sword, the Gemara darshins, chalal harehu, cherev harehu kechalal. A sword has the status of the dead body itself, which means like this. We know the highest level of tumah is a dead body. A dead body is avi avos hatumah. Something that touches a dead body is an avatumah. If a person touches a dead body, he becomes the next level avatumah. But if somebody takes a sword and kills somebody, the dead body is avi avos hatumah. You would think the sword would now be 1 degree below an avatumah. Says the Gemara, cherev harehu kechalal. The sword attains the status of avi avos hatumah. Okay, it's an important rule that a metal object that comes into contact with tumah attains the status of that tumah. So therefore, this person says to Rav Yaakov Emden, if the sword which killed someone is mamish avi avos hatumah, how could you use avi avos hatumah to shecht a behema? Says Rav Yaakov Emden, the question is empty, and the answer is absolute stupidity. What are you talking about? What does tumah have to do with food? Who in the world is careful not to eat tamei food anymore? Did you ever hear of a kohen? Oh, I'm not going to eat that steak because it touched a dead body? There's no such halacha. There's no kohanim who are careful not to eat meat that came in contact with tumah. So what are you talking about that the sword, because it's tameh, can't be used to shecht meat? But Rav Yaakov Emden says, I would say that the sword cannot be used to shecht for a different reason. What's the reason? The Gemara says in Sanhedrin that the stone, look at number 5, the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Memhei Amud Beis, Achas Evan Sheniskaba, a stone used to stone someone. In Bezin, right? We know Bezin carried out 4 types of death. Death penalties, right? So if they told the guy, you know, don't drive your car on Shabbos, don't write a word on Shabbos with your pencil, and the guy says, Afal Pekin, I'm going to do it. So he was warned. Bezin would take him out to the court, and they would throw him off a roof, and then they would stone him to death. So the stones used, let's say, to execute someone who desecrated Shabbos, You're not. Oh, what do you do with the stone? What do you do with the stone? Do you put it in the Jewish museum? I mean, what do you do with these stones? Right? The achas eats. Right? Imagine you went to the Jewish museum. Halavai, there should be something in there that said, this is a stone that used to be used to execute people who desecrated Shabbos. Right? That's what they should be in the museum. But are you allowed to do that? The achas eats shenisla alav, or a tree that Beis Din hung someone on. The achad saif shenaragbai, or a sword that Beis Din used to kill someone. The achad suda shenechnakbai, or the handkerchief that they used to choke someone. What do you do with it? eBay, what do you do with this item? Kulan nikbarin ima, you have to bury it with the mace. Now the question is why? Why would you have to bury the item used to execute someone? By the way, the Sefer Hasidim writes the exact same thing, that one time somebody found Jews who were killed al kiddush Hashem, and they unearthed the graves, and they find next to these Jews were the knives used to kill the Jews, and the Sefer Hasidim writes, don't use that knife, keep it buried under the ground. If you know it's good for you, don't get any hana from this knife that was used to kill Jews. Says Rav Yaakov Emden, why do you have to bury the item that Beis Din used to execute someone? Says Rav Yaakov Emden, it must be the same way you have to bury a mace, and you're now to get hana from a mace. This is important halacha. Right? If you ever, you know, it used to be in the olden days, you had grave diggers. Yeah, they would dig up the grave after the person was buried. So what would they do? They would sell the bodies. They would take out, you know, the cab, the fillings, right? They would take out the golden fillings and they would sell it, all right? There is a Isser D'Oraisa to derive any benefit from a dead body. We'll see, is it only a Jewish body or even a Gentile body? But a Jewish body, there's an Isser D'Oraisa to derive any benefit from a Jewish body. Once a person passes away, he's Asr Bahana. She's Asr Bahana. Says Rav Yaakov Emden, not only is the dead body Asr Bahana, the item that Beis Din used to execute someone in the Jewish court is also Asr Bahana and has to be buried. Says Rav Yaakov Emden further, what if the person who killed this Jew wasn't a Beis Din? What if somebody murdered a Jew? Someone took a knife, Chas V'Shalom Le'Aleinu, he committed murder with a knife. Not only do you have to bury the dead person, you have to bury the knife, even though the item used was not Beis Din's item. In other words, Rav Yaakov Emden understands that any item whatsoever that was used to kill someone is Asr Bahana. You're not allowed to derive benefit from. In fact, I'll tell you an amazing question that came up in the Shas Tshuvas Kol Mevaser from Rav Meshulam Rata, Chelek Aleph Siman Nun Ches. The administration of the museum on Har Tzion decided that every year on the 10th day of Teves, during their Holocaust memorial service, so they're going to get a chazan to sing a Kael Malay, to sing some Yizkor ceremony, and this guy, this chazan, you know, you can't be a good chazan unless you have a good gartel, so they were going to take out of their museum some artifacts, some Holocaust artifacts. For example, the noose that they found that the Nazis used to hang hundreds of Jews. So they're going to take the noose and wrap it around the belly of the chazan so that the chazan could wear this noose as a gartel when he says the Kel Moe on Yud Teves on Har Tzion for the Holocaust memorial service. And Rav Meshulam Rata was asked, is this permitted? So he says, of course it's not permitted. It's an Isser D'Oraisa. Aside from the fact that it is abhorrent to think about somebody wearing a noose around their stomach as they're singing a Kel Mole in memory of the Kedoshim, and despite the fact that it's probably, you cannot come up with a more pathetic way to memorialize the Kedoshim, says Rav Meshulam Rata, beyond that, it's actually an Isser D'Oraisa. Why? Because Rav Yaakov Emden tells us, based on the Gemara in Sanhedrin, that not only is a dead body Asr Bahana, but an item that was used not only by Beis Din to kill someone, but by any person who uses an item to kill a Jew, that item becomes Asr Bahana. So this guy, he's wearing this gartel and he thinks he's doing a big mitzvah memorializing the Kedoshim. Meanwhile, he becomes a Cheftza Shel Avera. He is deriving benefit, he's getting Hana from this noose. What should you do with the noose? should take the noos, and you should fulfill the mitzvah saseh da'iraisa of burying the noos. You know, you go to Yad Vashem and you see various tools that Nazis use to kill Yidden. You should know that displaying these tools is an Isser Dairaisa, because they're making money, they're getting a certain benefit by displaying them. You're not allowed to display them. You know what you have to do? Would anybody go into a museum and sit by idly if they displayed dead bodies in behind glass? Of course not. Right? People, there would be terrible outcry. There would be hafganot, right? There would be protests. You think the protests in Israel now? Just imagine if there would be dead bodies behind glass cases. Says Rav Shlomo Roth, it's the same thing to display a noose or any item the Nazis used to kill Jews. It comes from the same pasuk in the Chumash. Kavar tikvarenu. You got to bury the dead body. You have to bury, according to Rav Yaakov Emden, whatever tool was used to kill someone. Now, let's just realize that Rav Yaakov Emden's chiddush is a very big chiddush. Because all the Gemara says is anything that Beis Din used to administer capital punishment has to be buried. The Gemara doesn't say that if a guy killed a Jew with an item, you have to bury that item. So you say, what's the distinction? There's a very big distinction. Because if you look in the Rambam, when the Rambam codifies this halacha number 12 in Hilchos Sanhedrin, Parak Tezvav halacha tes, the Rambam says, you know why a tree that was used to hang someone? You know why a noose that was used to hang someone? You know why you have to bury it? Says the Rambam, very interesting. Not because it's Asar Bahana. Says the Rambam, if a person had relations with an animal, so according to the halacha, the person is liable to the death penalty. What do you do with the animal? Now the animal says, you know, moo, right? I don't have to keep the Torah. So we say, you're right. But if you're going to be parading down the street, you know, people are going to say, you see that cow? You know what Yankel did with that cow? Yankel's going to be very embarrassed. So it's bad enough we have to kill Yankel, but we have to embarrass him also, so we kill the cow. We kill the cow. So the Rambam says, the same way we kill the cow, we have to bury the noose. Because people are going to say, you see this noose that we hung this Jew because he did an Avera? If that's the case, if the Rambam is saying the reason why you have to bury the item that Beis Din used to hang someone, that would only apply then if Beis Din killed someone because of an Avera that they did, because it's shameful to the person if people are going to remember the Avera they did. But if somebody, Chas Hashem, was murdered by a Gentile, then the item the Gentile used is not a source of embarrassment to the Nifter, to the mace. But what are people going to say? The Jew didn't do anything wrong, just the opposite. He died al Kiddush Hashem. So you can make the case that what Rav Yaakov Emden is saying is really not that simple. Because the simple meaning of the Gemara is specific to when Beis Din administers capital punishment, like you see in the Rambam. But nevertheless, Rav Yaakov Emden understands that the halacha is, it's a universal halacha. Any item used to kill someone, to kill a Jew, not only do you have to bury a Yid, you have to bury whatever item was used to kill a Jew. And in fact, I'll tell you one more shaila, a horrifying shaila. You have brought down over here, in number 16, from Contemporary Halachic Problems, in the fourth volume, he brings down a footnote from the Tshuvas Vayan Avram, who has asked the following shaila. They found the pipes that were used in the gas chambers with which gas was channeled into the gas chambers. They found these pipes. Are you allowed to melt the pipes and fashion them into a mezuzah cover? Why someone would want to do that? But that's the question. And the answer he gave is, based on Rav Yaakov Emden, that not only is a mace Asar Bahana, but the item used to kill someone is also Asar Bahana. So you can't use the mezuzah cover as a mezuzah case. You can't use the pipes as a mezuzah case. So Rabbi Bleich would like to draw a distinction that actually Rabbi Yaakov Emden's case has nothing to do with the shaila at hand. Because when you have the pipes that channel the gas into the gas chambers, the pipes were not the item used to kill. The gas was used to kill. The pipes were merely the vehicle through which the gas traveled. If that's the case, You cannot say that the pipes were the article used to commit murder, and according to that, perhaps it would be permitted. I think that you could make the argument against this logic, and that is that if gas is traveling through a pipe, and without the pipe, the gas would just diffuse into the air and would not be an item that could kill, and the pipe is sort of directing the gas, I think you can make a very strong case that the pipe actually becomes the weapon of destruction. Nobody would say that a gun is not a weapon of destruction. Well, the gun is just the pipe with the bullet travels through. Of course not. A bullet in your hand is not going to do anything for you. What are you going to do with a bullet? You need the revolver to create the force and the direction. Okay, this is just, you know, academic. But that's the that is the principle of Rav Yaakov Emden. Rav Yaakov Emden's principle is that not only is a dead body usur to get hana, you're not allowed to get hana from an instrument that is used to kill. Rabbi Yisai, where do we learn out that you're not allowed to get hana from a dead body? Where does it say? Show me. Where does it say in the Chumash you can't get hana from a dead body? Where does it say if somebody is buried in the ground, you can't dig him up, take his golden tooth, and sell it on 47th Street? Where does it say that? This week's parsha. We're in this week's parsha. The pasuk says that when Miriam passed away, look at number 15, Vayavoyu b'nei Yisrael kol ha'eda midbar tzin. All of the b'nei Yisrael came to midbar tzin b'chodesh harishoin, v'yeshev ha'am b'kadesh v'atamas shom Miriam. Miriam died there. The word sham is extra. The Gemara in Avodah Zarah, Daf Chaf Tesamah Beis says, it says the word sham by Egla Arufa. It says sham by Miriam dying. Just like you're not allowed to derive benefit from an Egla Arufa, you can't derive benefit from a dead body. So somebody asks you, where does it say in the Torah you're not allowed to derive benefit from a dead body? It's this week's parasha. Thomas sham Miriam. Okay? So based on what we've just said, if you're not allowed to derive benefit from a dead body, so all of the information the Nazis gleaned from their experiment, from their experiments, and all the other scientific information that's been learned from bloodshed, you're not allowed to get hana from a dead person. Scientific information, isn't that hana? So if scientific information is a hana, then perhaps you're not allowed to utilize information that has been gleaned from bloodshed. So maybe you have to take all the data and all the statistics that the Nazis have on record, take it, and throw it into the Red Sea. You're not allowed to derive benefit from a dead person. Batama Sham Miriam. So again, it's apples and oranges. Listen to the distinction very carefully. Of course you're not allowed to derive benefit from a dead person. Of course all the experiments that the Nazis did and that they did in that institution, they're all prohibited. You're not allowed to derive benefit from a dead person. Fine. But now the information has already been learned. The information is sitting here. You're allowed to derive benefit from the information. You can't derive the information in the first place. But once information has been derived, you could use it. I'll give you a very simple illustration. There are many things in halacha that are asur b'hana. You can't get hana from clay hakerem, from if grapes and wheat were planted together, you can't get hana from it. You can't get hana from a shar haniskal, an ox that has to be murdered. But what would the halacha be if you sold the clay hakerem, or you sold the ox, and now you have money in your pocket? You weren't allowed to sell it. You weren't allowed to get the money. But now you have the money. Are you allowed to use the money? Of course you're allowed to use the money. You're not allowed to get hanah from the item itself. Once the item is transferred to something else, you're allowed to get hanah from the item it's been transferred to. That's pasha. It's obvious. Everybody knows. Anything which is asur b'hanah, even avodah zarah, even isurei hanah that are associated with avodah zarah. If you sold the avodah zarah, you weren't allowed to sell in the first place. But once you sold it, you could use the money. So in this case, of course, the Nazis were not allowed to derive information by killing people. Of course not. No one is allowed to derive anything from a dead person. But now the information is here. You can't derive information from the mace, but you could use the information. So the fact that Rav Yaakov Emden says not to use the executioner's knife as a shechita knife, right? You can't get hana from the knife. because that was an item used to kill someone. Or in the case of Meshulam Rata, you can't use the noose to put around the chazan who wants to gurgle the kelmale. And maybe you can use the mezuzah case that used to be the pipelines that the gas used to travel through. But now that the information has been derived, you could use the information. Let's advance one final possible argument. And that is a medical student. Student in medical school. So how do they learn how the anatomy of the human body? Cadavers, right? So they have a mess, they have a cadaver on the table, they dissect the body, they learn the different body parts, they learn how to cut. That's how they learn. Is that considered getting hana from a mess? Is studying the anatomy of a dead body on the table, is that considered getting hana from a mace?
No, because you couldn't kill him.
No, he's already dead.
Yeah.
Says Achsam Sofer, you cannot study a cadaver. What is it? Is it an Isser D'Rabbana? No, it's an Isser D'Oraisa. It's a biblical prohibition to look at a dead body, says Achsam Sofer. If you're looking at a dead body to learn the aorta, the chambers of the heart, or the chambers of the lungs, in order for you to gain scientific information, to be able to charge people a lot of money later in life, so then that is considered hana. Says Achsam Sofer, you're not allowed to study. Forget about sell. You're not allowed to study a dead body on the table. Why? Where does it say? A pasuk in this week's parasha. What's the pasuk? Batamas Sham Miriam. That a dead body is asur. But what do you mean? What's the hana? The hana is, how much money did you pay to go to medical school? You paid $50,000 a year? For what? To gain knowledge. That means knowledge is hana. You're not allowed. So you'll ask, so how does a Jewish person go to medical school? So the Chassam Sofer is bothered by this question. Chassam Sofer says that if you look in the Gemara in Bechairois, on the Memheim and Aleph, number 22 on the sheets, the Gemara tells us about a story with the students of Rabbi Yishmael, who they heard about a certain prostitute that the government killed her. So they bought her body and they boiled it in a pot. Now when you boil a dead body in a pot, you may not know this, but the flesh comes off very easily, and you know, you could have access to look at the bones. Because the students wanted to know how many bones in the human body. Because their Rebbe told them the human body has 248 bones. So they put this prostitute in the pot, they put up the heat to 450, and then they counted the bones, and they saw there are 252 bones. So they asked the Rebbe, you told us 248, but look at the pot, they're 252. The Rebbe said, women have four more bones. Men have 248 bones. Women have 252. Right? Why? Right? Women have, they need two hinges and two doors to be able to have children, the Gemara says. By the way, you know how many bones the human body has? According to modern day standards, 206. So you have to count certain subsidiary bones to be mashed in the 248. By the way, that's why when you make a Misha Berach for a Chayla, for a man, you say L'Ramach Evarav, 248. But by a woman, you say L'Chol Evarav. You don't say 248. She doesn't have 248. She has 252. Says Achsam Sofer, how did these students of Rabbi Shmuel boil the bones of this Zayna? But I thought, and my opinion is, that merely to study a dead body is an Isser D'Oraisa, you're not getting enough from a dead body. Says Achsam Sofer, another Chiddush. The prohibition of deriving benefit from a dead body is only a Jewish body, not a non-Jewish body. So, how do Jews go to medical school? They have to make sure that the cadaver on the table is not a Yid. So they say, Yanko, is it you? No, just joking. You're allowed to rely on the halacha. You're allowed to rely on the halacha that roiv bodies are akum. Roiv bodies are akum. So what do you do if you're a doctor in Eretz Yisrael? So Rav Cook has a tshuva. Then Eretz Yisrael, he says, they're required to buy non-Jewish bodies. It's a chil Hashem? He said, not a chil Hashem. How is it a chil Hashem? We have 613 mitzvos. We're considered God's chosen people, and all the goyim have to recognize that. And if they don't recognize that, then this is not going to hurt or help the situation. So if Cook writes explicitly that that's what the hospitals in Israel have to do, but that has nothing to do with what we're talking about right now. Says the Chassam Sofer, it is prohibited midairaisa to study the anatomy of a dead body. And his Talmud, the Maram Shik, brings a proof that obtaining information is considered a hana, because the Gemara tells us, if let's say I make a neder, I make a vow, that I'm not going to get any benefit from you, I'm allowed to learn from your svarim. Why? But what do you mean I'm gaining knowledge? Torah knowledge is not considered a pleasure. It's a responsibility, it's not a pleasure. That implies that if it would not be Torah knowledge, I would not be allowed to borrow, you know, your Mark Twain, Innocence Abroad, and read it, because I'm gaining knowledge from it. So what do we see from here? You see from this halacha, that from Torah is not considered hana, but secular information is considered hana, that obtaining knowledge is considered hana. The Maram Shik and the Chassam Sofer both say that one may not study a dead body because there's an Isser Hana. What about you want to make an autopsy on a body to see cause of death? That's another Isser Daraisa of it's Nivol Hames. It's a disgrace of a human body. But if I figure out why this person died, it might be able to save a life down the road. Says the Chassam Sofer, that's not called saving a life. Saving a life means when you have someone here lying at the table that you need to figure out why this guy died to save this guy, that's called saving a life. But the fact that you want to gain knowledge to save someone's life in a year from now, that is not halachically recognized, and that is prohibited. Okay? So if that's the case, by the way, not everybody agrees with the Chassam Sofer. Shaul Satchuvas Machane Chaim, a descendant of the Chassam Sofer, says, merely gazing at a dead body is not considered hana. And he brings a very interesting proof. This is just a tangential. We know that Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, Rabbi, after he died, he used to come back every Friday night to make Kiddush. Who's there? It's me. Oh, right? Rabbi would come back Friday night, he would pick up the kais, Savrima, and he would make Kiddush. So ask the Machane Chaim, what's his wife doing? His wife is wearing a paper bag over her head and not looking at him? Of course not. She's looking at him, but he's dead. And she's deriving benefit by looking at her dead husband. So you see from there that gazing at a dead person in order to derive benefit, that is not considered halachic benefit. You could argue against that. If you look on the side of the page there in Ksubis, Rabbi Kiveger says, look in the Sefer Hasidim. So if you look in the Sefer Hasidim asks, if Rebbe is dead, how could he make Kiddush? He's not chayiv in Kiddush. How could he be moitzi his family? So Yehuda HaChassid says, he came back not as a dead man, he came back alive. So if he came back alive, of course, obviously there's no prohibition to look at. Okay. But that's a discussion for a different time. So if that's the case, yeah.
This is sort of parsing.
Okay, so hold on. Okay. So according to that, it comes out that you're not allowed to study a dead body in order to derive benefit. So if that's the case, if you can't study it, so then how are you allowed to derive benefit from experimentation that the Nazis performed, that the American government performed, that in Tuskegee, Alabama, they experimented with 412 poor black sharecroppers? How are you allowed to derive benefit from that? But the Chassam Sofer says, you can't even study a dead body to learn anatomy. So how are you allowed to experiment on a dead body to derive information? What's the answer to that? The same distinction we've been saying all night. And that is, of course you weren't allowed to experiment in the first place. Of course you weren't allowed to study the anatomy in the first place. Of course you're not allowed to derive any knowledge from a dead body in the first place. But now that the information has been derived, no Paisek has ever said that you can't use the information. After all, it's been stated that most scientific information that we have today is based on inhuman, cruel, harsh experimentation. But does anybody say, okay, so you're now to become a doctor because all the information that has been gleaned was gleaned illicitly? Of course not. Rabbi said the distinction that we're drawing today is a very important distinction. Yes, the Rambam says you're not allowed to kill somebody to cure someone. Yes, Rabbi Yaakov Emden says you're not allowed to derive benefit from an item used to kill somebody. Yes, the Chassam Sofer says you're not allowed to study the anatomy of a dead man. But the Chassam Sofer never said that if you went, imagine someone came to the Chassam Sofer. He said, guess what, Chassam Sofer? For the last 20 years, I've been studying Jewish dead bodies to learn anatomy. Am I allowed to use the information I learned to treat people? The answer is absolutely yes. You weren't allowed to learn the information in the first place. But once information was learned, the information is not asur b'hana, you were not allowed to derive the hana in the first place. But now the hana is derived. So now you want to know, can I use the information? Absolutely. And in fact, there's a very clear proof that even scientific information that has been gleaned illicitly is permitted to be used. And this proof, Rabbi Bleich advances, and it's based on the Gemara in Masechet Nida, Daf Lamed Amud Beis. The Gemara says like this: there was once a queen by the name of Cleopatra, queen of Alexandria, or the Gemara says queen of Greece. Does anybody know why she's called queen of Greece if she lived in Egypt? Because after Alexander the Great died at a young man at the age of 32, so then his empire is broken up into his four generals, right? Seleucus, Antigonus, and Ptolemy took Egypt. So Cleopatra was the queen of that branch of the Greek Empire. Okay, in any event, so she had certain maidservants that were liable to the death penalty. So what did she do? She had them impregnated, and she wanted to conduct the following experiment. She wanted to see if males develop in the same amount of time as females. How long does it take for gender to be determined? Right? Halacha l'maaseh, we say it takes 40 days for a male's gender to be determined, 40 days for a female's gender to be determined. That's why we say that before the first 40 days, right, within the first 40 days, you're allowed to pray to have a boy, to have a girl, because the gender has been undetermined. Once 40 days pass, the Gemara says in Brachos, it's a tefillah shav, because the gender has already been determined. But there was a Tannaitic opinion that actually a male takes 40 days to form. Women are more complex, they take 80 days. That was an opinion of one of the Tannaim. So Cleopatra performed the following experiment. She impregnated a bunch of maidservants that were liable to the death penalty anyway. So they both, she started them all at the same time. And then, 40 days later, she opens them up, and she sees that those who are pregnant with males, those who are pregnant with females, they were all developed, their genders were developed on day 40. So from there, Cleopatra concluded that both male and females develop after 40 days. So the Gemara asks, how is that experiment valid? Maybe really it takes 80 days for a female to develop. And maybe this shifcha that Cleopatra thought she was impregnating on what she thought was day one, she really lived with someone 40 days earlier. So it turned out that she already conceived 40 days earlier, and when she opened her up and she saw a female, this female is 80 days old. Says the Gemara, Cleopatra used an abortive fashion. She gave the ladies a pill the day before that would abort any pregnancies they had, and this way they all starting on the same point of time. So Rabbi Bleich points out that we know having an abortion for a Yisrael, for a Jew, is an Isser Dairaisa, is a biblical prohibition, but it's not murder. But for a Ben Noach to have an abortion, it's ritzicha, it's murder. So that means Cleopatra, in order to glean her information, she violated ritzicha. So how could the Chachamim rely on her results? But these results came about through bloodshed. How were they allowed? They should have taken the results, buried it in the ground, together with the noose and the chazan's gartel and all the other items we discussed tonight. How were they allowed to rely on this information? The answer is, of course Cleopatra was not allowed to perform these experiments, and we wouldn't have been allowed to. But once the experiment has been performed, you're not allowed to get hana from a mace. But once the information is here in the world, you're allowed to use the information. So it comes out, halacha l'maisa, that that even though all the atrocities of the Nazis may be abhorrent to our human sensibilities, nevertheless, and even though our natural inclination should be, we can't use this information, but we have to take our natural inclinations and our gut reactions and our what comes to us at first glance, and we have to put it aside. And we have to say, what does the halacha say? And the halacha says that information that has been gleaned illicitly, unethically, immorally, and it was not allowed to be gleaned, but it's sitting here. And you have someone's life to save. So actually the halacha says you're required to use the information to save someone's life. But it doesn't feel good to me, and I'm appalled by such a thing. That's wonderful. Write a poem about how much it appalls you. But now we want to know what to do. And knowing what to do is not dependent on your feelings. It's dependent on Ma Gazar Avinu Shabbat. What does Hashem say? So Hashem says that you can't study a dead body only if it's of an Achri. You can't derive benefit from an item used to kill someone. But this information has already been gleaned. So as much as it rubs against our human sensibilities and our inclinations, we have to transcend our inclinations to do the Ratzon of Hashem. And that is the main limud of this week's parsha. You have a Parah Aduma. We don't understand it. We don't comprehend. Even Shlomo HaMelech, Chacham Mikol Adam, had no understanding of such a thing. But nevertheless, that's Zois Chukas HaTorah. That is the bottom line. That is the bottom line principle in the Torah. That in order to be a halachic decider, in order to be able to formulate a halachic opinion, you can't allow your feelings to play a role. And in fact, we'll conclude with this. The Gemara in Sanhedrin tells us that if you want to sit on the Sanhedrin, you have to be able to take a mouse, right? We spoke about mice before. You have to be able to take a mouse and explain 150 reasons why you're allowed to eat it. 150 heterim to eat a mouse. So Tosfos asks, but the halacha is you're not allowed to eat a mouse. So why would we want this guy, he's a chacham from the Manash Tana? He has 150 heterim to eat a mouse, but you're not allowed to eat it. So what do we need this guy to be, you know, have chachma shel hevel? So the Tartamima answers in his Sefer Tosfos Bracha. In order to be a dayan, you know what you have to recognize and understand? That the halacha is against your sensibilities and what you would think. In other words, if a regular person looks at a mouse and he says, ugh, I'm not going to eat it, I'm not going to eat it, he's disqualified from sitting on the court. Because to him, the halacha is rational. Someone who thinks that the halacha is a matter of, you know, this is something that's very reasonable and very rational, he's disqualified to sit on the court. The only type of person that is qualified to sit on a Jewish court is someone who would say that I could supply 150 logical reasons why the halacha should not be like this. And even so, I subjugate all of my logic and all of my sensibilities to follow the halacha. That is the main requirement to be a paisek according to the Gemara. To be able to say every ounce of me doesn't understand it. But I transcend my human sensibilities and my natural inclinations to follow the Ratzon of Hashem. Rabbi, have a wonderful evening.
You've just experienced another Torah class brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.